This is Fresh Air. Terry Gross is on vacation. I'm Barbara Bogave. That's Michael Wolff from his new CD, Impure Thoughts. Wolff is a jazz pianist and composer. He's played with jazz musicians such as Sonny Rollins, Cal Jader, and Cannonball Adderley, and he served for 5 years as the band leader for the Arsenio Hall show. Wolff also has Tourette's syndrome, a neurological disorder. He's collaborated with his wife, actress Polly Draper, on a new film based on his experiences in these two different subcultures, the world of jazz and the world of a person with Tourette's. Their film, The Tic Code, tells the story of a divorced mother, Laura, whose 12-year-old son, Miles, an aspiring jazz pianist, has the disorder. Miles' symptoms include facial and whole body jerks known as tics, also involuntary exclamations, coughs, laughs, and other behaviors. Miles idolizes a jazz saxophonist, Tyrone, played by Gregory Hines, who also has a mild case of Tourette's. Tyrone becomes romantically involved with Laura, played by Draper. Draper also wrote the screenplay and co-produced the film with her husband. Wolff contributed the score. Polly Draper has appeared on the stage and television. She's best known for her role as Ellen on the TV series 30-something. In this scene from The Tic Code, Laura and Tyrone are arguing about Laura's need to discuss Tourette's.
I don't think that it's odd that I'd want to talk to you about it once in a while. My God, I've watched my son be humiliated by it for years. And tomorrow's a really big day for him. His father's done half the humiliating. So, yes, it's on my mind.
What are you going to do, Laura? Just find more people with tics for him to meet? I hear there's a baseball player who's got them. Why don't you take him to a ball game?
Cut it out.
Jazz clubs, baseball games. You'll sit through anything, won't you? So long as you can eventually discuss your favorite topic.
My favorite topic?
If it wasn't for Miles and his tics, you'd never leave this f***ing apartment.
Stop yelling at me! Stop insulting me! I'm sorry I brought it up. I'm sorry you don't like to talk about it. But I have a little boy who goes to school every day and comes home calling himself a weirdo. And I can't help but be sorriest about that.
Well, let me pull your coat to something, Laura. He is right! People like me and Miles are weirdos. And the sooner he realizes it, the better.
You know what, Tyrone? You can call yourself anything you like. But while you're in my house, don't you ever talk about my son that way again.
Fine!
Polly Draper and Michael Wolff, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you so much for having us.
Michael, let's start with you. While the movie isn't overtly your biography, I imagine at least some of the incidents that are dramatized in the film come from stories you've told Polly over the years about growing up with Tourette's. How much did you two talk about Tourette's before making this film?
Well, actually, I have to say, when I first went out with Polly on our second date, she turned to me and said, "What's wrong with you anyway?" And that's the first
smooth,
time.
Smooth.
Yeah. He claims I said it like that, when really it was probably very gentle and kind.
Yeah, well, I'm sure inside you meant it that way. But, I'm sure I perceived it however I perceived it, because no one had actually ever said to me directly, you know, "What is that that you're doing? What's wrong with you?" People had obviously noticed it, because I at times have tics that are definitely noticeable physically and vocally. But nobody really just come out with it that straight. And I think it took me aback, but I did tell her that I had Tourette's syndrome. And you know, it was very hard. This was over 10 years ago when we first met. It was very difficult for me to speak about it at all, and really hard for me to even deal with it myself, because I had never been diagnosed with having Tourette's syndrome as a child. And I didn't find out that what I did had a name to it until I was in my 30s, and a friend of mine's sister-in-law, who was a social worker and had two boys that had Tourette's syndrome, just said to me, "By the way, do you know you have Tourette's syndrome?" And I said, "No, I don't have Tourette's syndrome." Then I said, "What's that?" And she gave me a book that Oliver Sacks, the neurologist, had written. And in one of the chapters, he talked about a jazz drummer named, he called the chapter Witty Ticky Ray, about a really funny, wired-up guy who was a drummer on the weekends, and by the day he had a regular gig. And so on the weekdays, he took his medicine. On the weekends, he didn't. And I definitely recognized myself and realized, God, I guess there is a name for what I have. So it was very difficult for me to talk about it with Polly. And yet, I was obviously, as we became more and more involved, something that came up and in various ways. And I think with Polly could probably tell, you know, I think friends of hers and her parents may have, you know, people often thought maybe I was on drugs. you know, speed or cocaine or something because my movements were intense. And people do notice, you know, and you have to deal with it.
Gregory Hines, who plays Tyrone, the character with Tourette's, he's a jazz saxophonist in the movie. He doesn't want to talk about it. In fact, he describes Tourette's to Laura as something he doesn't like to talk about.
Doesn't like to talk about, right?
So, Polly, I know my husband had an untraditional and a not so happy childhood, and all I have to do to ruin a perfectly good evening is to dredge that up. So, how did you dare to tell Michael this is what you were thinking of making a film about?
Well, he had been encouraging me to write something because I'd just been sort of rewriting all these other things that I had been acting in out of self-defense, and he thought that I really should write my own thing. And so when I came up with that idea, it wasn't just about the Tourette's, and I don't think the movie is just about Tourette's. What I really wanted to write was a really true and real mother and son relationship, because I think that in movies the mother and children relationships get short shrift, and I wanted to write something that was very real about what I thought was a really profound relationship. And that was what I thought of because I saw Michael wrestling with this issue and thought that it was an issue that I understood, and I bet you everybody in my mind, everybody would understand, because I think there's something about all of us that we wish we could rip out of our body, which is what the little boy in the movie says. So I told him that. He thought it was a really good idea, but he didn't want me to write it because he was afraid what he considered to be a secret would be found out. What he didn't realize was that everybody sort of knew anyway. They didn't know if it was Tourette's or not, but everyone was noticing something about Michael. And they always asked me. And he had put me in a position where I wasn't allowed to tell anybody. And so...
Sounds reasonable to me. Or did at the time.
So he didn't want me to write it. And so I said, all right, I won't write it. And then we had Thanksgiving dinner with his cousin. And his cousin's little boy had just developed these really severe symptoms of Tourette's, which he hadn't had the year before at Thanksgiving. And Michael was really saddened by it and... sort of, I remember watching him stare at his little cousin and with a lot of sadness, and he said afterwards, I think you should write it. But partly, I have to say also that a little off the Tourette's subject, partly the whole Tourette's thing was inspired not by that more deep and sensitive thing, but by this one time when I was standing outside one of the nightclubs here with Michael and some of his band who had just finished playing a set, and they were all standing there with toothpicks in their mouths, and they were all sort of arguing about jazz riffs and going, no, it goes like this. And another one would go, no, it doesn't, it goes like this. And I thought, you know, all of this reminds me of Michael's tics. He was there ticking away and then singing and ticking, and I realized how musical his whole life is, that his, first of all, he hears music in his head all the time, and his tics sound musical, and here he was in the perfect environment for acceptance of his tics, because here he was making these sounds that sounded like jazz riffs anyway. Yeah. And that's what really was the first glimmer that I wanted to use the Tourette's. And then I realized the deeper implications of it, and that's when I was worried that he might not like me to do it. But anyway, after he saw his cousin, he really wanted me to do it.
But I still didn't want her to tell anyone that I had Tourette's. Yeah. I was still under that fantasy that they would connect it.
Well, I can see this movie has even more of a backstory than I thought.
Yeah. Than you wanted.
Michael, do you see that kind of direct connection between your music and Tourette's?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Polly has often asked me about that, and she seems to see it. For me, I've only been who I am and have played music, so my perception of music is just my perception of music, and I'm pretty... You know, monomaniacal about the way I view music, I guess, so that when I've been asked this question, really just since the movie in the last year or so, I thought about it, and I guess if I were to really look at my playing from some sort of, you know, other position other than within myself, I would say that probably the one way that I'm different as a musician is that I do think I make leaps. I don't go along in a logical sort of progression of learning or logical progression maybe of even performing. I just try, I think it is impulsive and things happen where I can sort of just glom some information. And I think there's plenty of musicians I've met who are brilliant and don't have Tourette's syndrome. So I certainly don't think having Tourette's syndrome is, you know, a requirement for being a great musician, though it looks like it's a good chance. I just spoke with a neurologist down, one of the head guys, Joseph Jankovic in Houston, who thinks that Mozart did have Tourette's. But I think that, you know, I do think that there's something going on in my mind that's different. But again, since I've kind of been in denial about having Tourette's, I don't feel I'm identified as a Tourette's guy. You know, we say in the movie, Tyrone, the character, says, well, I don't want to be known as the Tourette's guy. You know, and I feel the same way. I didn't grow up with a diagnosis of Tourette's the way kids do now, and from 19 or 10 years old or whatever, so that to me, I wasn't a Tourette's person. I was just this guy that did this weird stuff, and I was a musician, and I played baseball, and I, you know, now I'm a father, and I'm this and that, and a husband, and also I do the weird stuff. So to me, it's just a part of me. But as I'm learning more about it, and I've gotten to be friends with Oliver Sacks, and I've talked with him about it, and he seems to think there's a big connection between the musicality with Tourette's and humor and sort of disjointed, surprising ways that you know, one and one doesn't equal two necessarily, or two and two doesn't equal four with Tourette's. Two and two can equal 43 or something. And I think that is, as I observe myself more and more from outside of it, I think that is the way it works with me.
In the film, Miles, the young boy who has Tourette's, he at one point stops himself from ticking, from his different physical mannerisms. And his mother, Laura, says, oh, I hate that. He looks like you're holding your breath. And he says, I'm not holding my breath. I'm holding my emotions.
My feelings.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does that, is that a little bit, is that what you're talking about, this emotionality?
Well, I don't know. You know, again, what I can tell you what I hate about having Tourette's. What I hate is that I can't help but appear vulnerable. Whether, you know, I don't feel I'm that sensitive of a guy, but I always got chicks because they thought I was so vulnerable because I was twitching and it seemed like I was all sensitive and stressed out. But truthfully, it just comes out in a physical impulse. And so I do tell all the young people with Tourette's, you know, men or women, hey, you're going to cop because, you know, you're going to definitely meet somebody of the opposite sex because there is something appealing about somebody who seems to not be holding everything in. But I wanted nothing more as a kid than to be cool, you know, and that's the jazz thing. You know, when I grew up in the 70s, you just keep everything in and, you know, I couldn't do it. So I hate that part that, you know, other people have things wrong with them, but it doesn't always show. You know, it's like with Tourette's, there's no way people aren't going to know about it.
You do something when you hold your feet. Kind of described it to me once.
It's interesting that you know, there's things that I've realized that I've tried to talk to other people about that they have no idea, and there are no words that I know in English or Spanish, which I speak a little bit, to describe what I do. But I have a thing that I can do where I can sort of push energy out to the outer reaches of my body by concentrating, and it comes out of my mind, but I can feel it in my legs and my stomach and my hands. It's the strangest thing. It's almost like I'm willing energy out. And there's a thing that, you know, when I've been on television, when I've performed, I'm able to do this and not have my tics or not having them show or to divert them. I think it's all about energy, and that's what Oliver Sacks says. You know, Tourette's is about energy, and it's focusing it or unfocused. And I notice when it most happens is when I'm driving or jogging or, you know, kind of my mind is wandering, and it comes like that. So I think that what I'm able to do is it's almost like I just go into a zone where I think I'll be the opposite. I will be like Polly described how I was at first with her parents, almost not there, almost catatonic, where I just have to turn everything off. And then I can contain, repress, suppress, avoid the ticking for a while.
Michael, Gregory Hines, in order to play the role of Tyrone, studied you, your tics. And you coached him and also the actor, Christopher, who plays the role of Miles. Mm-hmm. How did they do that? Did they shatter you for a day or practice tics, you know, in front of you?
The interesting thing was, I think, you know, I never saw either of them do a tic. I think what they did was I spent time with Gregory, And with Gregory, it was really just more hanging out. Like, we went to jazz club, we have dinner, we'd have drinks, you know, whatever, just getting to know each other. And I think he was observing me all the time. And there was just one or two times when he asked me, well, if you did this, if you got mad, would you have more tics, or a few things like that. Gregory is really an amazing study and actor. And so I think he just observed me. And I have to say that he nailed it to the point of when I saw the first day of shooting. You don't shoot in order, but the first thing we shot was outside on East 10th Street in front of Tompkins Square Park in New York. And I saw him do a scene, and it's when he describes what the tic coat is to a Robert Eiler's character, the bully Denny Harley. When I saw that, I almost just burst into tears because I saw myself. And it was a big catharsis for me to see that, and totally upsetting. I have to say, I was really angry, irrationally, at Polly for writing this thing. You know, why do I have to deal with it? I mean, it was so many emotions going on. But ultimately, during the 6-week period of shooting, I felt myself freed from my, I would say probably at that point, 30-something years of denial of this condition. So watching Gregory really kind of blew my mind.
What did you see him do that was so affecting for you? Because he's pretty subtle in the movie.
He
coughs
like
a little bit, and he blinks a little bit.
Yeah, he shakes his head, he coughs, and the way he was hiding it, he did a lot of tricks. I have a lot of tricks.
Just like Michael.
How do you hide it? What are your tricks?
Coughing. Playing it off as if I'm singing, you know, because a tick will kind of happen, and then I'll see it's there, and then I can, have you ever you seen somebody across the way, and they're waving at you, and then you wave back, and you realize they're waving to the person behind you, so you take that wave, and you bring it over and scratch your head, you know, or you do something like that to make it look like, oh, yeah, I was just reaching up for something, and it's kind of like that, you know, where I would start a tick, and maybe I'd reach back like I was massaging my neck, or I'd start to do a sound, and I'd turn it into a cough and put my hand in front of it, like Gregory does at one point when he's outside the club talking to Polly's character the first time. I mean, it wasn't too long ago I realized what I was in a store in New York, or a restaurant. I was ordering some food to go, and I just let out a whoop, as a sound that I don't do that often, but it kind of came out. And this lady looked at me, and I looked at her, and, there's always a question, am I going to say, oh, I'm sorry, I have Tourette's syndrome? Then they're going to go, what's Tourette's syndrome? And, I've got to deal with that. So, I just did what I usually do. I just looked at her, and I just decided I wasn't going to deal with it. But maybe it isn't what I usually do. I didn't really try to hide it. I didn't say anything. I just said, well, I'm in the world. She can take it or leave it.
There's a neurologist that said to me, people who have Tourette's just do what all of us want to do, but we have that pesky civilization that's kept us from inhibiting us from doing all these things. That it's when you hear some of these case studies, what these Tourette's people in extreme cases sound like is what we would be if we didn't put that one added dimension to ourselves of restraint. To me, part of why I found it so fascinating was that everyone who sees this movie finds it oddly familiar. And even though they don't have Tourette's, they sit there and say, ooh, why does this remind me so much of myself? And I think subconsciously we all have this, there's something going on with all of us that is being repressed, that is exactly what these people are doing. And I think everybody recognizes it. They also recognize what the Tourette's is a metaphor for in the film, which is, people accepting things about themselves that they do wish that they didn't have.
To me, the whole metaphor, the whole way the film is put together with really the triumvirate of Tyrone's character, Gregory Hines, Polly is the mother of a little boy, Laura, and Christopher Marquette. These are three people who basically, for whatever reason, feel very alienated from mainstream society, and they create their own little society in the jazz world of downtown village New York, where you can have an interracial romance, where you can be a little odd. One of the huge things that made me so happy to get into jazz as a kid was I felt I was accepted if I could really play. And luckily I was a good musician and I could play, but what I liked was, nobody was judging me. I was able to be with all different colored people. Some people were junkies, some people were whatever different problems we had. If you could play, that was what counted. And to me, I felt, you know, I felt these guys that I met, particularly doing jazz, when I was, I went on the road at 19 with this jazz vibist, Cal Jader, and I played with many, many great people, Cannonball Adderley and Sonny Rollins, and I had these guys who were, they were basically my mentors, and while they didn't have Tourette's, they were all outcasts from mainstream society, and they were all great artists, and they all accepted me, and I think were even more drawn to me because of my having Tourette's and because of me having something that maybe made me have some pain and some soul that I was able to express in my music.
Michael, when you were a kid, did other kids taunt you or have nicknames for you? Did they notice your behaviors?
Not to my face. I have to say I was pretty lucky in that that didn't happen, but I think I was, I got self-conscious about it in junior high school and high school when I became aware of my tics. So I think when I was little, I wasn't that aware of them. And so I remember one day I was walking in my, I think in the 10th grade in high school, in Berkeley High School in Berkeley, California, and there was this guy walking towards me. And I thought, man, this guy is making fun of me. He was walking funny and kind of jiggling around. And, you know, he's a guy who I thought was my friend. I went, God, I can't believe that. And it really upset me. And then a few days later, I saw him, and he didn't see me, and he was doing the same thing. And I realized he wasn't making fun of me. He just walked weird and did this stuff. But I was always conscious of it.
Now, you weren't diagnosed as a child. So did you have a way of explaining your mannerisms to yourself?
No, I really didn't have a way of explaining it to myself. I think I just felt bad about it. I think I felt like if I figured out what was really wrong with me, they'd go away.
How did your mother and father explain it?
Interestingly enough, my father was a psychiatrist, and we talked about it when I was in my late teens, and he told me, he said, you know, I know you have these tics, and I thought you may have Tourette's syndrome, and I did some research on it, and I don't think you do because you don't have uncontrollable swearing. And at that time, which was in the 70s, I think the diagnosis was much more strict than it is now. Now it's just if you have a vocal tic and a physical tic together or separately, you're considered to have Tourette's syndrome. So really, I think there had been other people in my father's family who had had tics. And my dad had a little eye tic when he was a teenager. So I think it was just, well, it's just the family thing.
Now, you started playing the piano when you were young kid.
I did, yeah.
And I think it was your father who got it into you. And I think I read somewhere that you grew up in Mississippi.
My father is from Indianola, Mississippi. My mother was from New Orleans. I grew up in Memphis for a while and in New Orleans. And when I was about 10, we moved to Berkeley, California. And then I spent my summers in New Orleans staying with my aunt, Nita, who's one of my favorite people in the world. And she's, you know, she could tap dance. She has perfect pitch. She took me to hear all this music when I was a teenager, and I used to sit in with people in New Orleans. And my father had perfect pitch, too, which means they can identify, you know, they didn't know C or D or E, but they could sing the same note every time when they wanted to sing a song. So it was my father who really turned me on to the music because he loved Count Basie and Ray Charles and George Shearing. In fact, I thought all piano players were blind because he loved George Shearing and Ray Charles so much, and I just referred to him, you know, as a little boy, you know, 4 or 5, play the blind guys. So when I was 4 years old, he taught me St. Louis Blues on the piano, and they said the first thing I recognized was his whistle when I was a little boy, and I learned to read by having these little 45 records, you know, and I learned to read the titles and the artists on them. So I was just, you know, luckily, my father, who was a doctor, said, whatever you do, don't become a doctor. The stupidest people I ever met were doctors. Do something fun. Be a golf pro. Be a musician. You know, be creative. So I had a lot of support.
Holly, your performance in the scenes between you and Christopher George Marquette, who plays your son Miles, are really impressive. I'm curious whether you imagined that he was your husband as a child in order to make it real for you.
No. Nothing like that.
She doesn't feel that tender towards me.
It's not the same relationship. The relationship that my character had with Gregory Hines is much closer to what. But
that's what you kept telling me.
As a mother, I think that a maternal instinct is just a maternal instinct and has nothing to do with, you know, imagining how your husband would have felt if he were a little boy. It's about what you would do to protect a child, no matter what his ailment is, or no matter what the situation.
Well, I remember once when Polly, when our son was about 1 or 2 years old, and you told me you were at the park, and a little girl hit him or something, and she was 3, and Polly said, "I saw what you did."
She pushed him off slide, and she thought I wouldn't find out, and I went up, and I said, "I saw what you did." I thought, "Geez, Polly, get a grip. She's only 4." So,
she never came back to the park, that poor woman.
Polly, I know this is ancient history, but can I ask you about 30-something?
Sure.
While we're here, you played Ellen, who I remember as the nervous, kind of wild, really skinny, single one, who everyone loved to hate. Now, how did you?
Yeah, well, I would have been really skinny if I weren't pregnant during the Tick Code. I was pregnant during that whole time, so. So.
She's still skinny, and they love to hate her.
Yeah.
How did you feel about your character?
Oh God, it was a fantastic character. I got to do all the things that the other characters were too, moralistic and.
It was like your character had Tourette's.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I got to say all the things that you know they wouldn't let Hope and Michael say because they were sort of the linchpin of the show, and I got to do all these things that. People could, you know, say, tut, 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 she shouldn't be doing that. But as an actor, so much more interesting to play than the goody-goody.
You know, 30-something, though, was so earnest and took itself so seriously, at least as a viewer, this was my feeling about the show.
Yeah.
And I imagine your fans took it very seriously, too, at least
at first. Oh, my gosh.
Did they approach you on the street as if you were Ellen?
Yes.
Still.
They still do. Well, especially when the character was having an affair with a married man, I was getting, you know, even my aunts were calling me up saying, you know, Polly, I think it's best that you stop that affair. You know, Aunt Taffy, I'm not really having the affair. And so, yeah, they really bought, they believed it. And, but that, you know, that to me, it's just, it was a wonderful role that I played. And, but when a show is really great and you do a good job on it, people identify you with that and think that that's who you are.
Well, you know,
which I should take as a compliment.
Absolutely. And I was on the Arsenio Hall show as a band leader at the same time that Polly was on 30-something. We'd walk down the street and we'd have such different fans. And I remember once we were walking up 6th Avenue and a couple was following us and we were actually going to make a phone call, and they came up. You know, it was a yuppie couple, and they said, "Excuse me, Miss Draper, but we'd just like to say we're such big fans of yours." And you know, that moment when you put your hand on Ken Olin's hand, and you were in the bathroom, and he comforted you, it meant so much to us. And Polly said, "Oh, thank you very much." And then we walked another block, and a guy had a billboard that said, "Girls, girls, girls." And we walked past, and he went, "Michael Wolf." So we kind of said, "Well, that's the difference right there between our fan bases."
Yeah, you got to cover all the demographics between the two.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, so many movies are revisiting TV series. Do you see a 30-something revival movie, or imagine it with horror?
I don't think that they're going to do it. We just had a 10-year reunion at the Museum of Television, and they asked that of Ed and Marshall, and they said no because it stood in this time and space that was so perfect for it and so right, and they wouldn't want to ruin that magic thing for it. The whole cast came to see me and to see.
Yeah, there was a reunion at
the premiere
in L.A.
So we had a reunion of sorts.
It was at a movie.
It was at a movie.
Well, Polly and Michael, I don't mean to beat this drum of Tourette's so loudly, but I did want to ask you if your relationship changed then after making this movie together, or Michael, your perception or your relationship to Tourette's has changed.
It's totally changed. I'm now on the board of the New York chapter of the Tourette Syndrome Association, and I saw, hey, Tourette's is a good career move, man. I'm going to swing with it. You know? I mean, this jazzing wouldn't get me too far. You know? But, it's totally, I mean, I have to say I'm not 100% just, hey, I'm a Tourette's guy and I'm happy. You know, it's painful. It's something I had shame for so many years. It's like, I'm not used to even being open about it. And, I mean, I sometimes forget, oh, yeah, now I'm being open about it. Because this movie forced me out of the closet. Like I said, when I was on the set, and it was the first time I had met other people with Tourette's, and I met the people with the Tourette Syndrome Association, and I saw, wow, it's really important for me as a person who's been successful, who's been on TV, who's somewhat in the public eye, to embrace this and, you know, I'm trying to mentor other kids and show them they can be successful. And we just got an email of a kid who, you know, in Houston, who heard us talking about on the radio talking about the movie, and he was 9 years old. Actually, his mother emailed us and said he has Tourette's. He just lit up on the radio hearing us talking about it, and his mother's going to let him go to this movie, which is rated R, and he's so excited to do it, and he was so proud that somebody with Tourette's was actually talking about it. So when I've seen, you know, what it can do, I've just, whatever uncomfortableness I have about it, I just have to push aside. So I feel that Polly gave me this great gift. It was painful. Part of me is still a little angry that I've had to be open about it, honestly, because I am still ashamed of it. But, you know, 90% of me is so relieved that I can just be in the open about it and know what it is and figure, you know, people can take me or leave me, you know, and having these weirdo things that I do, as I say in the movie, is part of me.
Polly Draper, Michael Wolff, thank you so much for talking today on Fresh Air.
Oh, so nice to talk to you.
Polly Draper and Michael Wolff's new film is The Tick Code. Michael Wolff has a new CD out. It's called Impure Thoughts. He's currently on tour with his band by that name. They play the Burke Fest in Great Barrington, Massachusetts on August 12th and go on to perform in Rochester, New York, Pittsburgh, Washington, D.C., and Pasadena, California.